This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
We're going to talk about immigration. We're going to talk about the assassination attempt on Donald Trump. Why do we still not know things? Lydia Moynihan is going to join us. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay. So this is going to be kind of a two-part little talk we have here before we get into the Butler assassination in a few minutes, and there's just so much more we have to get to on the show, dark money, all kinds of things. I want to talk about immigration and the liberal white woman. Let's first address this part of it. We're going to go to the very beginning of this. This is a concept that is as old as time itself and something we've talked about before. Tyrants. Evil men who are in positions of power in any country, they want foreigners to come in as fast as humanly possible. It's always been this way. I think it was friggin' Plato was talking about this. It's a very simple concept to understand. If I'm an evil person in charge and I want to burn down America, I only have to concern myself with people who love America. Americans who love America. People who have a loyalty to it. They're my only threat. If I can bring in people who don't have that same affinity for America or for whatever country I'm in charge in, well, then I'm on a gravy train with biscuit wheels. I'll promise to give them a little bit of cheddar cheese as I'm looting the country, and nobody's going to stop me. It's been done a million times before. It'll be done a million more times throughout history. The mass importation of disloyal foreigners is not one issue. It's not a side issue for the globalist communists trying to destroy Western civilization. It is everything. It is the foundation. It is the concrete. It is the rebar. It is the central pillar. With it, they cannot fall. Without it, they cannot succeed. Without the mass importation of foreigners, communists cannot succeed in destroying America. So, the Trump administration, for all the crap they're getting, and some of it's deserved, the way they fumbled the Epstein stuff, we've already talked about that. For all the crap they're getting, let's acknowledge something. They are going after illegals. Is it as fast as it has to be? No, not yet, but it takes time to build the machine. They're going after illegals. They're going after them hard. We're already at over 2 million year one. Let's hope that number increases year after year. They're doing it. And the communists inside the United States of America, you know what they're watching? They're not just watching illegals be deported. They're watching their power evaporate. That's what they're actually watching. They're watching their power slowly fade away. Every time an illegal gets deported from the country, a communist who hates the country loses power. And that's why they're out there warning you about masked men.
But also at the same time, in our states and many others, they're sending masked, armed individuals to snatch law-abiding residents off the streets as their own children scream in terror.
And these ICE agents running around our communities like masked bank robbers, terrorizing women.
This is not what we want in our country. This is not what we voted for. Maybe in Chile under the dictatorship, maybe in other dictatorships like North Korea and China and Iran, but in this country, we don't have masked armed agents ripping civilians out of their cars.
We have witnessed masked gunmen kidnapping our neighbors off the streets, and my understanding is they're outside waiting to do it again.
Are Republicans really that stupid to think that you can have masked men going around the country beating up brown people and throwing them in unmarked cars?
Now, you know why they speak that way. Well, they want the mass importation of foreigners, but there's another aspect to it. You have to sell that. You have to sell the mass importation of foreigners, because Americans are going to obviously push back on such a concept. In order to sell that, you need to find someone to sell it to. Who are the people in America who are so stupid, brainwashed, and naive they will accept that you should bring in a bunch of gang rapists from Guatemala? Well, they're known as liberal white women. They just busted up a child trafficking ring in Charlotte. Freaking horrible. It's like the worst thing you've ever seen. But that may have made you happy. It may have made me happy, but not the liberal white woman.
I'm a member of several groups here in Charlotte that are working behind the scenes to make sure that our migrant community, immigrant communities are safe while conditions are icy. So I'm here along with a bunch of other concerned people to make sure that families feel safe, that children get home safe, and that families know that they don't have to come out and put themselves at risk while this is happening. Very coordinated effort. Yeah.
What do you think about that, like that effort to do this?
I think that it's abhorrent that we have to do it, but the response has been incredible in the community, and I'm so glad that people are stepping up and putting themselves out there to protect our neighbors and our friends and community members.
Anything else you'd like to say?
Trump, can I say that?
If you're an evil tyrant in America, anywhere around the world, you have to find someone to sell your evil demonic ways to. And fortunately for you, there are millions and millions of American liberal women who are so dumb, manipulated, easily manipulated, that you can sell them filling up their own community with gang rapists and they will buy it. Truly just broken. And that's what we're up against. We have a huge show for you. Maybe you remember that little day where someone shot Donald Trump in the head. Miranda Devine has sources on some disturbing things we're hearing about the FBI, the current FBI. Before we get to that, let's talk about potato chips. I used to go in the gas station all the time. You know what my thing was? Well, one of my things? Lay's barbecue chips. Big Lay's barbecue chip man. But as I've gotten older and I've started learning to read labels, if you will, ingredients labels, I realized that's really not something I should be eating. But what am I supposed to do when I want a potato chip? Maybe even a barbecue one. Bandy crisps, man. I can eat them without guilt. Healthy, fresh, 3 ingredients. Yes, I even get my barbecue. I believe they call it Smokehouse. They have one, my son's favorite. It's like an Italian dressing chip. Gosh, it's friggin' good. You want some? Eat them guilt-free. You don't have to feel bad. VandyCrisps.com/JesseTV saves you big money. Go. We'll be back. Remember when someone tried to blow Donald Trump's head off in Butler, Pennsylvania? That was kind of a big deal. Shot him in the air, did most definitely kill Corey Comparator, and then Joe Biden came out and pretty much said everything's fine. Look, we're going to work it out, but everything's fine. I wonder how fine everything is. Joining me now, Miranda Devine, host of the Pod Force One podcast. Hey, Miranda, is everything fine?
Hi, Jesse. I don't think so. I think that if you look at people like Ron Johnson, whose job it is as a senator to do oversight of the FBI, why has he had to wait now? It's 16 months to get information that he requested on that assassination attempt, things like camera footage and forensics and other documents. And, you know, to the point where even under Donald Trump's FBI, Senator Johnson had to subpoena Kash Patel, the new director, for that information on the 12th month anniversary of Butler in July. I just do not understand why Senator Johnson says he's being stonewalled, why I've been stonewalled. I asked when this source gave me this information, this digital footprint of with a lot of disturbing information in it, I asked the FBI if they had had any contact with any interaction at all, any body complain about him or inform about him to the FBI. All I got the answer back was no comment. Christopher Wray and his deputy Paula Bate told Congress that they'd had, they said they searched the database and found nothing on which is kind of a weaselly way of very finely passing that information. FBI people have told me, given the violent nature of his online statements over a long period, it is inconceivable, I'm told, that the FBI would not have had him on their radar and paid him a visit, at the least.
Okay, as best you can, understanding that this is a PG show, what kind of violent statements are we talking about here? Most of us are just criminally unfamiliar with this online world of chat rooms and dark crap these people get into.
Well, look, my source found about 17 online platforms that had a presence on, had an account. And YouTube had the most number of comments. There are about 700. And this is where interacts with other users. They chat about things. Sometimes there's frequent connections with certain people. They have this little community of chatting. And so he would say, comment on a YouTube video of Jonathan Turley talking about the impeachment of Donald Trump. And this was in his anti-Trump phase towards the end of his digital footprint that we see before he went dark. And he's saying, well, you know, Trump was stupid. That's one of his comments. Earlier, when my sources first started to pick up his online activity, he's very pro-Trump, says he's the epitome of patriotism, very anti-Democrat. In one of his statements, he says in all caps, murder the Democrats. He's very antagonistic to Ilhan Omar and the squad. And then he flips in January of 2020. You know, in December of 2019, he's pro-Trump, anti-Democrat. In January of 2020, he's just done a 180. Suddenly, he's anti-Trump. He's calling Trump a racist. He's calling Trump supporters sheep and in a cult. And then he progressively gets more and more sort of violent until, you know, rhetoric violent, until August 2020, which is probably his most disturbing statements, where he talks about the assassination of political leaders and military leaders, after which he just disappears. He becomes a ghost on all these platforms, according to my source.
Miranda, so before we move on and touch on a couple other parts of this, you've combed through these things. You're the one with the source. It's one thing to post some ugly things online. Honestly, 99% of young men today will say something stupid online. That's just kind of the way it's going to work. It's another thing entirely to grab a weapon, go dark on the internet, which is difficult enough for most people, and then go to actually try to kill him. Did you pick up on anyone he's interacting with possibly pushing him in this direction? Because that's the only thing that makes sense to me.
Yeah, remembering that anyone who was grooming him or radicalizing him or pushing him in a direction wouldn't necessarily be visible in online or in the material that my source found, which is incomplete. There is one interesting interaction, and it was during his anti-Trump phase. He was communicating with a Norwegian neo-Nazi called, who used the name Willy Tepes, T-E-P-E-S. I believe that's not his real name, but he was associated with a Norwegian terrorist group. It's been designated a terrorist group by the State Department. In fact, designated last June, 1 month before Butler. I mean, that was probably just a coincidence, but it's a terrorist group. And so this Willy Tepes would, you know, use the sort of violence rhetoric, talking, you know, Maoist phrases like you could only change things with the muzzle of a gun. This was something that embraced and repeated that statement, and his language became more violent as time went on during that Willy Tepes interaction period. So and my sources found Willy Tepes on other platforms post Butler. So the most recently, October 2025, when Tepes says to another user that he had been contacted by Russian and American intelligence. Don't know if that's true, don't know anything other than that's what he says. So what to make of it, I don't know. I do know, I have been told by intelligence sources, that if this terrorist organization designated, foreign terror organization designated by the State Department, the CIA would be aware of this and aware of any interactions with American citizens like, and would refer the investigation of this American citizen to the FBI. So again, all fingers and roads point to the FBI having an interaction with before Butler. And I just don't know why we're not told whether that's so. Certainly Christopher Wray said that they hadn't, but he parsed his language very carefully. And when I asked the FBI last week when I was doing this story a number of questions, including did they have any connection with or interaction or any communication about before Butler, I got the answer back, no comment.
Miranda, finally, as we wrap this up here, I was hopeful that we would have some improvements at the FBI. Certainly some bad actors seem to have been let go, but have your interactions with the FBI improved in any dramatic fashion over the checka we had under Joe Biden?
No, not at all. In fact, active hostility in some quarters because I was advocating for two FBI whistleblowers, Steve Friend and Garrett O'Boyle, who were so badly mistreated under the Biden administration, and expected that as soon as Trump came in and Kash Patel and Dan Bongino took over, that their circumstances would immediately improve, and they hadn't. They since have been reinstated, but I mean, they still haven't got their back pay. Steve Friend's still sitting at home. So I, you know, have been critical of their treatment and said they were betrayed because they had many interactions with Kash Patel and Dan Bongino before they took these lofty positions at the FBI, and after that were ghosted. I understand they've got busy jobs, but Scott Bessent, Treasury Secretary, also has a busy job, and he managed to find the time and the heart to reinstate the two IRS whistleblowers who put their reputations, their careers on the line, and they are now have got promotions and are working for Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent in reforming the IRS and ensuring that what happened to them and the railroading of that Hunter Biden investigation never happens again. Steve Friend and Garrett O'Boyle are honourable people and were whistleblowers and forced to do that. And they are patriots, and they could be very helpful with reforming the FBI, but they were just ignored and cast aside. And so when I pointed this out, I got a very hostile reaction. So it doesn't bode well, I think.
No, it certainly doesn't, does it? Miranda, thank you for all your work. I appreciate you. All right, so let's talk about the economy, the refocus on the economy with Lydia in a moment. Before we get to her, let me help you out. Chalk. Natural herbal supplements from Chalk. Maybe you've heard me talk about taking a male vitality stack every day. Maybe you've heard me talk about that for, what, 3-4 years? I've been taking it 4 years, I think, now. Maybe you've considered a female vitality stack. Maybe you're thinking, I want more energy. But maybe you're hesitant. May I make a suggestion? Try some chocolate powder. Listen, go get a bag of chocolate powder. It's delicious. You put it in a glass of milk or a smoothie, something in the morning. It's really my breakfast half the time. It's packed full of vitamins and minerals. Tell me you don't feel so much better, more energy all day long. Good kind of energy, not the energy drink. I'm dying. Try it. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
The Biden administration started the affordability crisis, and my administration is ending it. I'm ending it. Prices are way down. Our energy prices are way down. And you know, despite hamburgers being a big business, energy is one business that's bigger. When you get energy down, everything else is affected. If you start bringing the price of gas, that's like a massive tax cut. Prices at McDonald's are coming down. It's moving down. unfortunately, they were so high in the last administration that people aren't that happy because it was so high. So even though it's coming down and coming down a lot, they want to see where it was, like when I was president. And we'll be getting it very close to that number, maybe even better, depending on what we do with energy. But the energy is coming way down.
Okay. Joining me now, Lydia Moynihan, New York Post financial correspondent. Okay, Lydia, Donald Trump is certainly no moron. He's a man who understands that people want prices down, and really that's the big reason he's in the White House. As much as I love other things about him, and you probably do as well, he's in the White House because things got too expensive and people can't go out to Red Lobster now.
Yeah, exactly. It's not the Epstein files. That's not why he got elected. It is because the economy was tanking under Joe Biden for the average American. I mean, inflation hurts working class people more than anybody else because it's basically eating your wages. You have much less purchasing power. So look, I think the Trump administration is doing, to the most part, everything they possibly can. I think they're deregulating, which is helpful for the economy. They're making sure that we can drill and get access to energy. That's taking prices down as well, and will have sort of a spillover effect. But it does take time for these things to happen. And the other thing is that inflation is almost impossible to reverse, right? If you're speeding down the highway at, let's say, an inflation rate of 10 miles per hour, that was basically what inflation was at under Biden, and you slow down and you're going 9 miles an hour, you're still moving, right? You're just not moving quite as quickly. But to actually go back and reverse prices to what it was before the pandemic isn't really feasible, unfortunately. And so, again, I think we're going to be in much better shape than if Biden or Kamala Harris was running the country. But I don't think that we're going to get back to pre-COVID levels anytime soon. And I also think it takes more than 9 months to see the impact of these policies.
So, Lydia, does that put us in kind of an economic slash political game of chicken, if you will, where voters are still mad that they can't afford what they could afford 5 years ago? That's why they tossed Democrats out. But we have midterms coming up next year, as you well know. We have 2028 election that's not that far away, as you know. Are they now going to look at those same prices and say, hey, you Republicans are sitting in office and you didn't get me back to Red Lobster. It's your fault now. Or are they just going to start getting used to it?
Well, first, I reject the notion that it's Red Lobster. I think they also want to go back to Olive Garden. No, but look, the rent is still too damn high here. And what I've been thinking a lot is the affordability issue. That has become the buzzword since Zoran Mamdani made it the buzzword here in New York City, where everything is really expensive. And I think conservatives and Republicans have a tendency to basically say, oh, well, we also want to subsidize things. We also want to make sure that the government gets involved to help you. And I think what Republicans need to do is take a step back and point to the facts. And the facts are that anytime government gets involved in any industry, whether it is healthcare, whether it's subsidizing childcare, whether it's food stamps, whether it's housing, education is another huge example. As soon as the government gets involved and tries to start subsidizing that for people, the prices go up. So if you look at over the last 30 or so years, the prices of everything that government gets involved with, those are skyrocketing. Meanwhile, the prices of things like technology or clothing, anything that the private sector does, those prices go down. So I think we need to have a bit of a framework sort of adjustment, if you will, because I think Republicans are too quick. They want to make voters happy, and they're too quick to say, oh, yeah, let's make sure that you have enough food stamps or this or that. And I think we need to take a step back and message the fact that, as Reagan said, government is not the solution to the problem. Government is the problem. And I think that's going to be so much more compelling because, you know, you have here in New York, Zoran Mamdani, who's basically saying, oh, there's no problem too big or too small that government can't solve. That is a terrifying statement, right? And so I think Republicans really need to message government is the problem. We want to get out of your way. And I think the good thing, actually, Trump is not an ideologue. He just likes to find solutions that works. And so I think right now he is proposing all kinds of solutions. The 50-year mortgage was not well received, I think, for good reason. But I think it's not a bad idea. Throw it out. If somebody wants a 50-year mortgage and that's going to make them happy, it's a free country. Let them do it. But to your point, I mean, the issue is that any of these economic policies, especially when it comes to deregulating, it takes a long time to see the impact, right? And so it's easy to sell socialism. It's free, free, free. You know, you get a car and you get a car. And it's a little bit harder to sell, no, in the long run, you're going to end up like Venezuela if that's what you do. And one other thing that I've been thinking about as well, I've been seeing some conservatives, for instance, kind of go after, so BlackRock has been buying up a lot of single family homes all across the country. And people are pointing to that as one example of corporations basically making life more expensive for everyone. But this is the issue, and this is, again, what conservatives need to debunk. It's sort of the stage one thinking Thomas Sowell talked about. You basically think corporations buying something bad or government helping good. You just think about the first stage, and you don't think about the long-term repercussions. And if you think about it, actually, the fact that you know, you have these companies now looking to buy companies, that has spurred development. One of the big issues is over the last couple decades, we haven't had a tremendous amount of new homes built. So now you actually are seeing a lot of development happening because those people know, well, you know what? There's going to be a buyer. I can make this bet because somebody is going to swoop in and get this. And so that's actually spurring development. I've heard some conservatives say they want to ban that. I think that would be a bad idea, right? And so again, I think we just need a message. The free market is always the best and the cheapest and the most affordable solution. When you have government, that makes it complicated, right? In New York, there was a great piece in the Free Press. There's 50,000 apartments that are just sitting vacant because of government regulation. Government here in New York basically passed something saying you can't raise rents a certain amount. And there's all of these landlords who now are like, well, why would I rent this out? I can't afford to renovate it, to rent it out at that price. The numbers aren't going to work. So I'm just going to sit here and keep the apartment and not let it rent. And that's, of course, another example of government interfering and raising prices.
Yeah, take it from an old guy who's bought and sold several homes. Please don't take out a 15-year mortgage if you're watching this. Please, please do the math on what you would actually pay for that. I'm begging you, don't take out a 50-year mortgage. I just my blood pressure can't handle the idea of that. But I do want to talk to you about New York City. Oh, gosh, I know. I do want to talk to you about New York City, a place I dearly love. In fact, I'm going to be there in 2 weeks. And I'm concerned that this is going to be my last visit, Lydia, because it's getting filthy. The whole place smells like pee or weed. And it's awful. Last time I was there, a homeless guy dropped his pants to his ankles and peed in front of me on the sidewalk. And it was noon in the middle of the day. And it's just freaking awful.
I saw that literally 2 days ago.
How much worse? Oh, gosh, I'm sorry. How much worse is it going to get?
I think a lot worse, not to be glum here.
Oh.
But if you think about Eric Adams, kind of feckless, kind of corrupt, but at least he wasn't embracing and pushing for defund the police and all of these crazy ideas that Zoran Mamdani clearly believes. He's like kind of walked them back in the last couple months, but there's literally 5 years of him tweeting, defund the police. The police are anti, you know, queer and racist. And there's dozens and dozens and dozens of times that he said that. So I think we could be pretty clear that, you know, what he was tweeting for 5 years is probably what he's going to do more than what he said in the last 2 months right before the election. But yeah, I'm really concerned. And it's interesting because we saw sort of one group of Republicans say, you know, oh, this is going to be great. Republicans can run on Mamdani and win the midterms. And isn't that going to be fabulous? New York is going to be a disaster. And we can point to that as how socialism fails. And I think Trump actually now is also saying he wants to work with Mamdani. And he was very clear during the primary that, no, we want to save New York. New York should be like a crown jewel of the United States. And that's what we want. So look, I don't know what's going to happen, but I guess so my hope is, and if you look at who voted for Mamdani, a lot of it is foreigners. In fact, if it had just been native-born Americans voting in this election, Cuomo would have won. If it had just been working-class people, Cuomo would have won. But it was a lot of foreign-born people who, for whatever reason, maybe felt that Zoran Mamdani reminded them of where they came from. I don't know. But there was a lot of sort of champagne socialists as well. And I read this story this week about how the mayoral victor in Seattle, running on a socialist platform, pretty similar to Mamdani, how her parents still give her money. And I have a theory that parents still giving their kids money is the root cause of most of the bad policy in America. And I say this because I have a lot of friends here. Again, parents subsidize their life. And what that has created is an entire class of voters who is completely untethered from any economic reality. They don't understand, oh, I don't want taxes to be raised because that would mean I would keep less of my money. There's no sort of critical thinking skills if you don't actually have to live with the consequences of your decision, right? If your parents are giving you money and you have a driver or you can afford to Uber everywhere, you're never going to have to face the fact that defund the police means you're not going to want to take the subway because it's spooky and people are going to show you parts of their body and do all these crazy things that you don't want to see, right? So people need to live in the real world. And this is such a prevalent thing here in Manhattan. You know, middle class or upper middle class kids from all over the country move here and their parents help them out. And then they just think it's chic to be a socialist because Emily Ratajkowski and the cool influencers are all talking about how, you know, hot girls are for Zoran, and they are completely removed from any reality of their decision. And that's another thing, actually, is it's a lot of transplants, people who moved here in the last 5 years who voted overwhelmingly for Mamdani. It was not lifelong New Yorkers. So pretty interesting, kind of, as we've seen that breakout of who and where and why and whatnot, how Mamdani came to power. But yeah, don't give your kids money when they're 30. Like, it's just not a good idea.
Lydia, you know what else isn't a good idea? Taking the subway as a young woman. Why are you taking the subway? Get a freaking Uber or something. What's wrong with you?
I mean, it's expensive. That is the issue. You know what? I have gotten pepper spray, which, of course, is something technically illegal in New York City. You can't get it because why should you be able to protect yourself in a disgusting city that our horrible blue state leaders have created? So I do have that. But yeah, I also city bike a lot, which, it's funny, probably is more dangerous, but it feels a lot safer. No, one sort of, I guess, glimmer of hope. I don't want to be one of those people who comes on and talks about how the sky is falling and how horrible things are, because we still obviously are super privileged. If I could live any time or place, it would be still right about now. But Elise Stefanik, who has been such a voice of reason, she was the one, of course, who was grilling all of the university presidents about anti-Semitism on campus. She has announced her candidacy for governor here in New York. And the polling, again, a year's a long time, as we know, anything happens. Everyone thought Cuomo was going to win a year ago. But Stefanik's polling is very impressive, and people don't like Hochul. So I am very confident, actually, that she stands a very good chance of winning. Lee Zeldin, who I didn't think would get very far, he actually almost he came in very close to Hochul in the last election. So my hope would be that people in New York kind of start to wake up and literally look around. Like are people just, I don't know, blindfolded? Like, do they have their blinders on? I don't understand how somebody could walk through New York City and think, like, I think we need a social worker. Like, how could you reach the conclusion that Mamdani is going to solve these problems? I'm honestly baffled by it. But I think hopefully there'll be a moment of waking up. And unfortunately, I think there's going to be some collateral damage in the interim. But I think Elise Stefanik stands a very good chance of winning. And ultimately, the governor does have a lot more power over the purse, the MTA, a lot of those things that we have to deal with in New York City than the mayor does.
Unfortunately, many of Mamdani's voters come from a place that's actually dirtier than New York City, and that's half the problem. Lydia, thank you so much. I appreciate it. That sucks. Lighten the mood. Next.
We need to get dark money. That's that hidden funding behind too many campaigns contributions. We need to get it out of our politics.
There's got to be a word. Irony doesn't properly describe the word of a Democrat talking against dark money, but what even is dark money? It sounds so cloak and dagger. Joining me now, Ashley was gonna, she's about to explain it to us. Ashley Brasfield with the Daily Caller. Hey, Ashley, dark money, for those of us not aware of it, the floor is yours. Will you kind of break this down? What is dark money? Is it CIA agents slipping envelopes of cash under the table? That's really cool, actually.
Yeah, the way I describe it is just it's very hard to track, and it influences elections kind of on the daily. I just did a story on this specifically on the Tennessee 7th District special election that's coming up soon in December, replacing the Congressman Green, of course, who was one of the head chairmen in Congress. But this is kind of just one of those things that, you know, you hear about the George Soros influence, the Arabella group that kind of funds a lot of these elections. And in this case specifically, they were trying to fund the independent candidate. They saw that the Democrat candidate wasn't really winning out here in any way. And so they decided to just kind of switch their tactic and go to the independent candidate in order to beat the Trump-endorsed Republican, Matt Van Epps, here. So this is kind of one of those things, it's very hard to track. You have to go through Federal Election Commission records to look at all this. Open Secrets, many people know, is kind of a record tracking to see where all these funds are coming from. But it takes kind of, you know, hard work and some, you know, digging to find some of this stuff a lot of the time. But I think you're right about the cloak and dagger. That is kind of what is the key with a lot of Democrats on trying to, I guess, just hide a lot of these funds, where they're coming from, the certain agenda that they're trying to push in these elections. And obviously, you know, not pushing the Trump candidate specifically within Tennessee, which is a very red state. And many, you know, I would say Democrats moved to the state from places like California, which you hope, of course, don't vote Democrat after moving away from a state like that into Tennessee. But it is a very important seat in Tennessee, and I think they're working in ways to try and defeat the Republican candidate as really the best they can in any way.
Ashley, can you lay out for me, just pretend like I'm a complete drooling idiot, which should not be very difficult, lay out for me why it can't be tracked. I was told that all this money is public. I know the FEC has a website. Can I just pull up the website and I can look at who donates to Donald Trump or Ted Cruz or any Democrat? This is public information. Why can't you track it? Are you just being lazy?
No, I think this particular PAC is called Your Community that was funding the Tennessee district election. And this is the case for a lot of these scenarios with this dark money is you can't, it goes back to an address in Delaware. And so there's no name linked to the address. It's just a house address. But it's a lot of these that, you know, these nonprofits that are being funded to push the Democrat agenda, but you can't find a certain name or person that it's linked to. You can find these kind of groups. And of course, Arabella is one of those that is linked to George Soros, very well-known dark money Democrat, you know, just activity that goes on within elections across the country. But this one specifically is very interesting due to it being a Tennessee election and then linking it to a state like Delaware, which is extremely random.
Yeah, that would be random. AOC said something extremely random. Here was AOC.
I want to say this right now. I fully welcome Trump voters into our coalition. And I know that sounds crazy to some people, but just hear me out. I cannot tell you. It just happened to me like 2 weeks ago. I can't tell you how many times someone has pulled me aside and said either I was once a big Trump voter and a Trump supporter, and I watched Fox News every day, but then I started to kind of expand my world and where I got information, and now I've learned, and now I've changed, and I'm with you, and I learn from you. Or people who meet me who are really big Republicans now, and they are shocked when they meet me because they're like, you are nothing like I was told you are. And you start to see the cogs turning.
Yeah. I would like to say that's not happening, but where are we at right now with the movement? I know the honeymoon phase doesn't last forever with the new White House, and there's always going to be problems. That's the way it is. Are we solid? Have we lost a lot? Have we lost a little? I don't think they're all globbing on to AOC.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're all clobbing on to AOC, that's for sure. It's kind of more, I would say she's more progressive wing of the party, if anything. So it's hard for me to believe that a bunch of, you know, MAGA supporters would go and say, oh, we, you know, align with AOC. That's really hard for me to believe. To say, I think you're right about the honeymoon phase, to say that we're not in a place where there is some, you know, contingency within the party on certain issues. And the one that comes to mind, of course, is Israel currently. But I mean, I think when you saw the last three elections that happened in November with Virginia and New Jersey, and of course, the New York City mayoral race, where you have somebody that's very similar to AOC, Zohran Mamdani, win that race, it's a lot of young voters and they're capturing the Gen Z demographic specifically, and specifically, like I said, on the Israel issue. Maybe that is where they're getting more of a malleable base that they can get people to come over to. I would say that the, you know, standard MAGA base that's been with Trump since 2016, they're never going to align with AOC, though, would be my thought process on it. But, you know, AOC, she's used to be the, you know, the squad member that was screaming, yelling. She's been quite quiet. There is this battle that's still happening even within the Democrat Party that's being overshadowed and nobody wants to concentrate on right now because of the in-party fighting that's currently happening. But, you know, the progressive wing fighting with the establishment, you're seeing this in places like Maine with Graham Plattner, who we call Maine Mamdani, actually. And you saw this in the New York City mayoral race where Schumer never endorsed Mamdani. And a lot of these elections, it is this kind of different characters of Democrats, the establishment, moderate, low-key type, I would say. And then you have the loud voices like the AOCs, like the Mamdanis. But Schumer doesn't want to, you know, acknowledge them, and they're battling back and forth with each other. And I think the DNC is eventually going to have to make a decision on who they kind of want to go with here and what's going to work on a national level.
Isn't time working against the moderates, though, Ashley? The truth is Schumer is probably retiring, reportedly retiring in 2028. Joe Manchin's gone. Nancy Pelosi's retiring to drink vodka for the rest of her life. The younger, more radical communists all look like you and not Chuck Schumer. So doesn't time say they're taking over no matter what?
It's looking like that. I don't know necessarily in places like New York City specifically, where you have a bunch of, you know, higher educated females and males under the age of 40 that can't get jobs and they feel like the capital system isn't working for them. They're capturing that dynamic with the guise of socialism, which we all know if you've been educated on it, hasn't worked anywhere else. But that's the issue. The education system has not taught people under the age of 40 about socialism in any way, you know, communist China, whether it be the USSR and Russia. And it's been years since we've seen the system fail. So I think that's what New York is, the experiment currently in New York City, under a socialist, you know, executive in this case. So I think this is going to be a real test. And I think it's a failure within the education system to have people like this being, you know, propped up in power, like AOC, in systems that don't work, where their policies continue to fail, but, you know, they're willing to do it because none of them have had jobs and none of them have success after getting college degrees at a higher education level. So, you know, I think we have to have a selling point, and Republicans really have to get a selling point as to why they can help with domestic policy, concentrating on that. I think affordability is the buzzword that I continue to hear in the days following this November election. And I think that's a talking point that I've seen coming from the White House quite a bit as well.
Yeah, it seems as if we've kind of lost the plot, as we oftentimes do. Donald Trump's in the White House because of inflation and immigration. He's not there because of, you know, Epstein or foreign policy or these other things. Once we get back on track and start focusing on making life affordable, we win again. And if we don't, we lose. Do I have that right?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, I think it's concentrating on domestic policy. Of course, I think right now it's just obvious that you can see, you know, contingency happening within the Republican Party right now. People want to turn a blind eye to it, but I think face it head on and work together on the domestic policy, especially going into 2026 midterms. I think the results were quite telling. I don't know how telling, but I think it should send a message in some way of what we should be doing moving forward, specifically within Congress or within the administration.
Ashley, come back. Appreciate it. All right, lighten the mood. Next. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And we've had a talk like this before. Father Time is undefeated, isn't he? Look at me. If you've been watching this show for a while, you'll notice I look a little different up top. Maybe you've noticed this is getting a little grayer by the day. Father Time is undefeated. He comes for all of us, of course. And for the longest time, Nancy Pelosi, Grandma Vodka, ruled Washington, D.C. with an iron fist. Both parties were afraid of her. She was sharp. She was hard as nails. Now, this is how she's doing.
Any questions on the subject for our colleagues? Where? See? Yes, sir. There. I thought I saw someone over there. No? No questions on the subject? No. 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 Yes, okay.
None of us have it forever. I hear you, Grandma Vodka. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.